The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now, you're multitasking. But what if you could also be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. So multitask right now. Get your quote now at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
We did have a slow start tonight for sure. A slow half. Not just a slow start, but we played pretty bad in the first half. And so that's something that we got to get better, look ourselves in the mirror, and come out and try to get better from.
Just felt like in that game, fourth and two, that's an advantage situation for us. Felt like we knew the coverage systems that would be played in that particular D&D and felt really good about the play call.
They can blame me. They can put it all on me. And, you know, if they want to chant MVP when I come running out, then they can get mad at me for this one.
Jared said it was kind of tough to hear in the huddle. What was it like for you, you know, trying to silence the crowd, being that, you know, there were so many Raiders?
I think it's just the way we want it. You know, we're so thankful for the Chargers fans that showed up. But, you know, I think it's a great opportunity to go out there and play a really good football team.
Everybody's saying the right things as always in the aftermath of a football game. Give us more entertainment. Give us a human moment. Tell us how you really feel. Don't say what you think you should say. We never say what we think we should say. We say what we want to say here on Pro Football Talk Live. I say, even though I don't want to, good morning to Christopher Sims. Welcome back, man with the small head. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you. How you doing? You look a little tired today. You all right? You good? You good? How you feeling?
Well, you know, last night was old school. First of all, it that was. Really is an insult. We've been down this road before.
I know.
And let me just make a general public service announcement, right, to the extent that this counts as the community service that I'm still trying to perform to fulfill that unfortunate incident from several years back. I'm just kidding. When you say to someone you look tired, it is an insult.
Right.
No matter how you say it.
Yes.
It is a passive-aggressive, right, if not flat-out aggressive insult.
Right.
You look tired.
Yes.
Is the half-cousin to you look ugly.
So I don't know
don't
about that.
Tell people they look tired. But it's not a compliment. It's not a compliment.
I wasn't trying to give you a compliment. Don't worry.
I'm glad you're getting the point. People do it all the time. And they're like, oh, I'm just concerned about you. Well, okay, that's fine. But don't tell me I look tired. Just say, you feel okay today? You doing all right? Everything good? Oh, okay, yeah. Just make it sure. I don't even know that that's acceptable.
Is that allowed? Just, yeah, right.
I am not a fan of you look tired.
No. Really? Really?
Well, we haven't talked about it in a while.
I know. It's been a while.
And I fully endorse any and all rude responses to you look tired, including you look fat, you look ugly, you look stupid. I think all three.
Oh, I don't think tired's nearly as offensive as those. I mean, some of those.
No,
are,
but it opens the door. It opens the door to it.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Sure. Hey, you can be concerned and go, hey, you look tired. But yeah, I'm totally doing it to.
You didn't do it.
I'm doing it to get you a rise out of you. Yes, I did it to do exactly what just happened there. It got you a little ticked off, and I
peeling one
accomplished.
Peeling yeah. two.
Go ahead.
I got two left. Chicken. Which one am I going to peel?
Walk,
Eli Manning. Hey, if If Eli Manning can do it, I can do it.
Seriously.
Actually, I can't.
Seriously.
Well, it was old school Monday Night Football. I got the shakes. I thought mom and dad were going to make me go to bed at halftime. It started right around 9 o'clock
right?
because of a weather delay in a stadium with a roof on it. Hey, Stan Kroenke, if you're going to pay $6 billion for your stadium complex, don't put a carport over the stadium. Put an entire freaking roof over it so that we – well, not that it ever storms in California, but it did last night in Southern California.
Well,
it slowed the game down.
It was like I don't know if I heard this right. What they were just worried about what, like the upper tier, this one area that was somewhat close to the open air? Is that how I understand it? You know, I kind of was in and out at that point. Like, you know, I mean – yeah, I was getting dinner or whatever, and I'm trying to get ready for the game, but I didn't hear the exact reasons. I was a little surprised, too. I think that's what I heard.
I think it was something along those lines of
okay.
There are two open ends, and there was a safety issue. And I'm all for being safe.
Yeah.
How about build the stadium so it's inherently safe, and you don't have to worry about shutting it down? It may be the only time there's ever a lightning issue in that venue. I don't know, but they plan to use it a lot. I don't know how many days per year there's actual lightning in L.A., but there was last night.
There was last night.
And it slowed the game down, and it was like the 70s all over again, and I felt like I should go to bed at halftime. And you know what? I bet a lot of people did, because it was 21-0 at halftime. It was over. It was done. Don Meredith somewhere was singing, "Turn out the lights, the party's over." And I give the Raiders credit for doing what the Bengals did on Thursday night. We had bookends. Big lead at the half.
Yeah.
And the team that was trailing came out on fire in the second half. The Bengals pulled it off. The Raiders got close but weren't able to finish the deal.
Yeah, unfortunately for the Raiders, or, you know, I mean, you could either say fortunately or unfortunately. It's kind of been the theme of their season so far. Slow starter, you know, and then get a feel for the game, and all of a sudden their offense starts to explode, and you can't stop them for a period of time. And we were kind of at that. I give them a lot of credit. I mean, they were undermanned. Secondary injuries at corner. Of course, the O-line's banged up. I don't think Josh Jacobs is near 100%. Peyton Barber banged up. So they had their issues, certainly. But this is something we've seen from the Raiders so far this year. I mean, hey, well, they were down 14-0 Ravens, right? You know, the week after that, it was the Pittsburgh Steelers game. I don't know if they were down there, but it was close, and their offense kind of just is very conservative early on in football games. They got down to the Dolphins, came back, so it seems to be part of their DNA. I think it's a little bit a part of, like, once Gruden and Derek Carr kind of figure out how they're being attacked, then they can open up that vault and start being aggressive there. But the Chargers weathered the storm and made some plays when they had the fourth down stop, and, of course, had their own fourth down conversions that kind of took back the momentum of the football game, and I give them a lot of credit for that, too.
It was 14-0 Monday Night Football week one.
Yeah, it was,
Ravens
right?
over
yeah.
the Raiders
right.
before they woke up. It was 14-0 Dolphins over the Raiders week three before they woke up. It was 21-0 last night before they woke up. That is not the way that you want your season to go, where every week you fall into a hole and you have to dig your way out of it. Credit to them for making the adjustments on the fly.
Right.
But how about planning a little bit better? Chris, something's going wrong in the planning on both sides of the ball that the Raiders are falling behind by double digits in three out of their four games this year.
I don't disagree with that. I think there's offensively, let me speak to that first. I think there's two things. I do. I think that, you know, one, people know they're playing John Gruden and Derek Carr, and they know they got a ton of answers in their offense. That they got every play in the history of football, and Derek Carr's got the majority of them in his head. And, of course, Gruden's, yeah, spider two, why banana, can it with it. So they got a million things, and they got a million answers. I do think defenses give them a lot of different stuff early on in football games because they know, or at least they have a good feel or know that how Gruden might attack or the things he can do in certain formations. So they change their looks up. And then I think the other thing I would look at is, hey, I think in every one of those games we're talking about too, even the Pittsburgh game where I know they weren't down big early, hey, Derek Carr, I think he plays conservative early. He does. I mean, we didn't really – there was a difference Derek Carr, I thought, in the third quarter. And I'm not just talking about, yeah, I know the offense was moving, but there's a more aggressive frame of mind. I feel like early on he's kind of just feeling it out and let me execute the offense and let me not mess things up here. And then he doesn't step on the gas pedal until he feels like, all right, It's time. Like, it's either now or never. And, you know, that's just a hard way to live in the NFL. And you're not going to win like that consistently if you continue to do that. So I think that's two things that at least jump out to me on the offensive side of the ball, Mike.
I mean, they could be 1-3. You could argue they should be 1-3. And it's impressive that they were able to come back from 14-0 down twice. But last night, 21-0, unable to do it. And really, if they hadn't given up that touchdown at the end of the half to make it 21-0, maybe it would have been a different outcome. Maybe 14 is the magic number. Once they get to 21,
that's a lot.
That for the Raiders. Chargers have now won 5 games in a row in the AFC West, and it was huge for them to get that win last night. It's a swing game. You're either both going to be 3-1, or one's 4-0, and the other is 2-2. That is a huge, huge momentum shifter for the Chargers, and they're in pretty good shape now. Both LA teams at 3-1, and the Chargers not far off from where the Rams are. I'd love to see those two teams play this year.
Yeah, I'm with you there. Hey, like, if I had to make my first banner statement, like, the first half of that football game, I mean, Justin Herbert. I don't know any other way to say it. I mean, when Justin Herbert starts to catch fire and get a little rhythm like he did in the first half, and again, these aren't even, like, they weren't bombs down the field or 70-yard touchdowns or anything. It's just one after another, 5 and 10 and 15-yard strike. Over and over. I mean, of course, here's a 20-yard strike down the field. But, I mean, from in the pocket, Mike, and I was actually having this conversation with my dad a little bit last night on the phone when we were watching the game. I'm not sure you can't argue he's the best in-the-pocket passer in football. It just doesn't matter. As long as he has a little space to throw, doesn't matter if people are in his face, he could throw it right over. But look at every one of these balls. On the money, perfect spiral. Oh, I got to throw a 100-mile-per-hour fastball? No problem. Oh, I got to throw a touch ball to the back out of the backfield? No problem. Perfect spiral. On the money. And that, to me, is where he's truly special, and they become hard to defend when they can protect and they got the weapons outside. And man, he's like a machine out there. He's like the Megatron of quarterback sometimes. I look at him like.
And during the tap dance time on ESPN last night, as they filled from what would have been the kickoff until the actual kickoff, they were carving his bust for Canton. And I think he's awesome. I think he's great. I know there's one head coach who regards him as the best of all young quarterbacks in the NFL now. And he is great. But you got to keep it going. I still am astounded, though, that there was even a question between him and Tua Tagovailoa. Just based on size and skill set.
I got you. I mean, yeah, right?
How was it even a question for the Dolphins to take Tua over Justin Herbert? Were they so locked in on Tua because that was the narrative all year long in 2019 in the college football season, that Tua was the guy? Tank for Tua, tank for Tua. Hey, we didn't have to tank and we still got Tua, that they never pivoted to Justin Herbert. And it's easy now with a year and some change to come to that conclusion, but it's a different human from the standpoint of size and everything that you see when you study him in the pocket, like you said, doing things, moving around, durability, all the stuff, the arm strength. I don't get it. And I think that Booger McFarland was a little over the top by saying that no one saw.
Come on, what his damn ex teammate. His damn ex teammate was trying to tell everybody. Come on, ex teammate, throw me a bone there.
Yeah. But the guy's special. Yeah. And will he be in Canton someday? Well, he's still got a lot of work to do.
Right.
But we're pretty impressed with what we've seen so far. Last night, 25 for 38.
He's got 222
yards.
Right? Yeah.
3 touchdowns.
Yeah.
Yes.
He's got
the talent. Now he's got to go get the pelts on the wall.
Right.
That's what gets you in the Hall of Fame.
Yes.
Now, Dan Fouts made it without ever getting to the Super Bowl, and obviously without ever winning it, but you've got to have some all-time great records, and those are harder and harder to come by with Tom Brady stretching it as far as he possibly can.
Right.
So they're gonna have to compete with some of the best teams in the league. Oh, and by the way, they are. They're 3-1. They lost a close game at home week 2 to the Cowboys, and they're on their way. And I was a firm believer in the Chargers going into the season.
You were.
And that's one of the few things that I've gotten right this year, so I'm going to ride that one.
Yeah, well, you should, and you were smart there. I mean, I think you explained it right with the Tua Herbert thing. It's a different stratosphere. I think it's, again, another lesson like Mike, and I'm sure it'll come up during the draft this year where there'll be another guy from a big-name school – and we'll talk about a guy from just a little bit lesser level of a school, and the world will be like, what? No way. I've watched that guy at that big school win, so he's the reason. You can't tell me otherwise. And that's just, it's every year. But I think, you know, for what you said, it is quite obvious. It was always quite obvious to me from that faction. I mean, did people really think at the time, like, if you didn't put Justin Herbert at Alabama, like, they would have fell off? I mean, obviously not. Now it's easy to say. But, man, they just, if they can continue to protect him the way they do, which we've seen pretty good protection all 3 weeks, weapons, tight end, got the run game going last night. If they get the run game going, like you heard Brian Griese and Lewis Riddick talking about in the fourth quarter, they'll be unstoppable on the offensive side of the ball. Because the other thing, Mike, that we haven't even seen yet, they're doing, like, it's not a big play, like, you know, 50-yard bombs type offense. It's really more of, like, you know, an intermediate Drew Brees offense.
Saints offense. Yeah.
Right? Yeah.
It's the Saints offense.
It's from 8 or 9 years ago where Drew's usually just carve you up for 8, for 10, for 8, for 10, and just back and forth. And that's what he's doing right now. And I think that almost makes it more impressive with his decision-making and accuracy all the time.
Yeah, high percentage, higher percentage than throwing it all the way down the field, but he makes it 100% most of the time because he throws the accurate ball and they keep moving the chains and they score points and they get it done. Back to this whole college football dynamic.
Yeah, let's
correct
do
me
it.
If I'm wrong.
Right.
2018, wasn't Justin Herbert perceived to be one of the best prospects until he decided to stay? Like, it's amazing how college football coverage blows hot and cold with certain guys. And, you know, if a guy rises 1 year, if he isn't extra phenomenal the next year, somebody else fills that void, and the scouts kind of forget about him. Like, are the scouts that impressionable that they forget that this guy was pretty damn good last year, and maybe there's a reason why it fell off a little bit this year? I remember Lamar Jackson, the year after he won the Heisman, he was still as good as he was the prior year, but his team wasn't.
Right.
He wasn't getting all the buzz and the coverage, and that kind of knocked him down. It's just kind of weird that scouts, I feel like, are influenced by the fact that the shine comes off of a guy a little bit when he stays for that extra year.
I'm not going to blame the scouts. I think it's more people in the building with some of these, you know.
That's a good point.
I think it's
like
more
the owner.
Right, the owner.
I want Tua. I get Tua.
Exactly. The GM, whatever, the head college personnel guy, you know, their butt starts to be on the line for the decision, and they go, wait, oh my gosh, Alabama never loses. He puts up good stats. He's charismatic as a guy. And Justin Herbert, everybody's making him sound a little bit like he might be bubble boy up in Oregon, and he'll never leave the bubble of Oregon. And then it wasn't like a machine on offense, not because of him, because the offense wasn't very good in Oregon, but it got blamed on him to a degree. And that becomes a little bit of the, you know, the mantra or the headline on some of these guys at times. And, yeah, they can't fight it back. But you're right. I felt like he was, like, more strongly on the radar the year before than he was the year when he got drafted by the Chargers. Certainly, there seemed to be more hype about him. More negative stuff started to come out. And it is. It's crazy to me. And at some point, people just got to evaluate the player like you're talking about, the physical skill set. Does he have brains? Is he an idiot? Okay, he's got pretty good brains. He can really throw it. He's got good feel for the game, and you go from there. But too much right now, at least in my opinion, in the NFL world, they're attaching quarterback player to the team, and they're thinking there's some magic he's giving the team. When I go, no, you know the magic he gave the team, Tua in Alabama? Oh, there was like 20 first-rounders on the team. That was the magic. Oh, that's right. So it wasn't really him. And that's where people, I think, get lost in the evaluation at times.
Two quick Justin Herbert observations, and we'll refocus on the game. Number one, I only had one negative on Justin Herbert, and you know what it was. We learned it at the scouting combine.
Yes.
The day that you ended up losing your lunch. One of his boyhood idols was Joey Harrington. Right. Justin. Maybe that's why he fell to number six. And number two, I have a friend who is an ardent and informed and very thorough and passionate Dolphins fan who has been a Dolphins fan for decades.
Yeah.
He texted me last night. I'm not watching this game tonight. I can't do it. I can't watch Justin Herbert because we could have had him and we didn't take him.
Right.
And that's going to haunt the Dolphins and their fans, except for the people who are still card-carrying members of the Tua Mafia. And that group, I think, is starting to dwindle. Most Dolphins fans, I think, are going to be tormented for the duration of Justin Herbert's career because he was right there. They could have had him. They took a quarterback, and the next guy off the board was Justin Herbert.
Yeah, I mean, no doubt. He would have been an organizational-changing draft pick. You know, the Dolphins, who are struggling offensively right now, and, of course, one of the things we were worried about Tua coming out in the draft was his size, his durability. He wasn't that durable at Alabama. Is he going to be able to do that in the NFL? You know, so we've had all sorts of problems, actually, with Tua through 2 years. You know, he admitted some of those after his rookie year. And none of that's come up with Justin Herbert. In fact, it's always just like, oh, wow. Oh, he's better than I thought he was in person. Oh, wow, he's smarter than I thought he was. Oh, wow, he's got better instincts than I thought. I mean, it's just, it's one positive after another. And good for Justin Herbert, because I don't know, it just seems like he is like the most humble quarterback in football, too. I will say that about him as well. He just never seems to be affected. Even when we interviewed him that day, it was just like, ho-hum, all right. Talking to two idiots about football, big deal. He talks it. He's a very normal guy, and I respect that about him a lot, too.
Topic for another day as it relates to the Dolphins. Keep an eye on what happens this season, because they've got an owner who is not bashful about making changes.
Right.
There could be some heat on the seats. Seats that we assumed going into this year were completely stone cold. But I'm sure we'll be talking about that as the season continues to unfold, especially if the Dolphins keep losing. Austin Eckler, Chargers running back, the guy that took over from Melvin Gordon, 117 rushing yards last night, a career high. Impressive video of him doing one-armed pull-ups.
Whoa, that was
crazy. Are you kidding me? This guy in that offense, and that's the key, and Greasy made this point last night. You put him in that Saints offense, you give him Justin Herbert and all those great receivers they have, there's going to be some openings for Austin Eckler to do what he did last night.
100%. You know, I mean, he's as we see right here, he's pretty good between the tackles for a smaller guy. Runs with a little bit of power. But if you give him the outside like this, man, he can get out, accelerate, get a 15, 20-yard gain. And then I think, you know, most importantly, like you talk about this Saint offense. I mean,
watch this one. Watch this.
I mean,
pow, bang.
It's amazing,
I'm in, baby,
that he can have that type of power in that small package of a body. I mean, it really is. And then, the pass game effect, like you talked about. So they don't ever have to, like, you know, really take the back off the field. Oh, okay, Eckler, we're going to run the ball. Great. Oh, okay, now we're going to do, like, Alvin Kamara passes out of the backfield. Hey, we got Eckler. Let's do that with him, too. You know, that's special that way. And like you said, it's going to be tough as they continue to go if they run the ball like that, because they got the weapons on the outside. They got a good tight end in Cook to work the middle of the field. And I don't even think they're probably not even fully encompassed into the offense yet and still in a little learning process there. So I think that's like the positives for the Chargers and their football team.
Yeah, very dynamic and balanced offense, and off they go. Now, for the Raiders, who were one of the last two unbeaten teams going into the game, it's now just the Cardinals, as everyone expected 4 weeks ago. The Raiders, what do they need to fix? We talked earlier about not falling behind and having a better plan on both sides of the ball. But, you know, more specifically, once they get into the game, what is it that you think they need to be worried about the most?
Well, you know, other than last week, the run game hasn't really taken off. I think that's one aspect of their team. They're kind of waiting to get going, and that's going to be hard with the offensive line. You know, I'm not panicked about their offense in any way. I'm not. I don't look at it one area and go, oh, man, you know, they're really got issues here, and that concerns me for the rest of the year. I think the thing I kind of said at the top of the show would be the thing I'd like to see change a little bit. You know, open up the game plan a little bit more earlier in the game. You know, be a little bit more aggressive then. Back some people off right away, and then they can get back to, you know, kind of, they want to do what the Saints and what we talked about with Justin Herbert. They want to hit 5 and 8 and 10 and 5 and just be in the right play all the time. But I feel like sometimes, you know, you got to scare the team a little bit to back them off, to open some of that stuff off. And they just seem very conservative early. I think that's the number one thing that jumps out to me. But I'm not concerned about that offense. I'm not. They just need to get healthy on both sides of the ball. And I think, to your point, they played a really damn good team. And they played a guy in Brandon Staley who's a head coach for a reason after only being a defensive coordinator for, what, 2 years? Because he's game plan specific, and he throws some stuff at you, Mike, that, you know, you go, wait, we prepared for this all week, and holy crap, he's playing us like this. We didn't think he was going to do that. And that's where I think Brandon Staley is really special and a pain in the butt, and will be a pain in the butt for offenses all year long.
The key moment in the game, in my estimation, the turning point was with 11:23 to play and the Raiders down 21-14. They had 3rd-and-3 on the Chargers 28,
yeah.
And Derek Carr took a sack.
Oh, that was
big. Covington.
Right.
And then they missed the 52-yard field goal, and you throw on top of it the Chargers with a very methodical, clock-churning drive. They score the touchdown. By then, there isn't nearly enough time for the Raiders to score the same 14 that they started the half with. And there's, now, that image there, the still frame, the bracing by Carr, a lot of criticism of Carr for that. Hey, look, anybody who steps
between
those white lines.
They're getting on social media for that?
The cringe. The cringe and the cover. And let's listen to Joey Bosa talk about how he believes that if you start putting bodies on Derek Carr, he changes.
I think we did a great job on both sides, running and passing. We knew once we hit him a few times, he really gets shook. And you saw on CeCe's sack, he was pretty much curling into a ball before we even got back there. So great dude, great player. He's been having a great year. But we know once you get pressure on him, he kind of shuts down and he's not as effective with a crowded pocket. So that was the key to it.
So it's not just social media. The Chargers figured it out, and they look, again, you're getting hit by large, strong men.
That's right.
There is an element of pain that goes into it, and your body remembers it, and your body reacts. He's not making a conscious decision to go pill bug when Christian Covington's bearing down on him, but what else can you do? It's either that or hit the deck. Either brace for impact or you hit the deck, and he braces for impact, but, you know, some people are going to say that's not a good look.
Well, I mean, to me, that's just, it's piling
on. Protecting the ball, though.
Exactly. That's 100%. He wants to make sure they can be able to kick the field goal. You know, they ran a play where it was really a Hunter Renfro, right? They call it 3rd-and-Renfro there in Vegas. It was a play for him. It was all a bunch of window dressing to have him run a little option route. Brandon Staley bracketed him or doubled him, had a guy inside, outside. So the play was kind of screwed. I mean, again, if we want to show the highlights there one more time of that play and stuff, there's nobody open. You know, let it go. You can let it go, especially the end zone copy, Pete or Kristen. That you'll see that. I mean, there's nothing there. And, yeah, he's thinking, okay, let me get points. Let me get stripped here and fumble the ball. I mean, I've seen a lot of other quarterbacks curl up worse than that in that situation. I'm not sitting here trying to, like, defend Derek Carr and tell you he's Hercules. But it just he's, again, one of those guys that people just – they like to jump on when there's a chance. Like, oh, yeah, he curled up. I want to go, well, I've seen other legends curl up worse than that, and we don't say one thing about it. But with Derek Carr, we're going to. And that bothers me. That's like, you know, just not fair in my opinion.
It's amazing how there's no middle ground with Derek Carr.
No.
It's either MVP or,
oh, he's a wimp. We don't
negativity.
Want him.
There's right. No middle ground.
Right.
It's amazing. Most quarterbacks have that full range that can move around depending upon the outcome of a given game. For Carr, it's either put him on the short list of MVP or get him out of Las Vegas.
Yeah. And, Mike, like, to me, it's one of the reasons we might see conservative Derek Carr early on in football games because of, you know, that perception around him. You know, in the pregame, I caught them talking about that. You know, I mean, it constantly being tried to replace Deshaun Watson, Aaron Rodgers, Kyler Murray, dabbling in that part of the draft process. There's been some other ones. So, I mean, everybody's
don't
always...
Don't you think Gruden does that, though, to keep quarterbacks on their toes? But haven't we gotten to the point where we figured out he just does that because he thinks that having that little ounce of fear, you went through that, that he thinks, right or wrong, that gets more out of a guy.
Well, maybe, but I think he's always looking to try to replace. He's always putting blame on that position. And I think at some point in the last year and a half, he realized, wait, if I continue to do this and he's playing pretty solid football, I'm going to really have a bad reputation of just being, you know, a quarterback whore, for lack of a better way to say it. Like, always looking for the next guy. Hoarder, right. Hoarder. That's what I meant to say. Sorry, Liverpool.
Hoarder.
Right. And
we've gone through so many of these things, we're going back around. We're playing the album all over again.
Yeah, baby, that's right. The greatest hits. But, I mean, how can that not play into his psyche a little bit? With that, and then, you know, yeah, I played for John Gruden in the fact, too, where, you know, he'll micromanage you to death and be in your ear. And if you make mistakes, you can feel the panic in his, you know, voice and the way he talks to you. So he's probably coming out a little conservative early on in the football game, just to go, like, you know, he's just getting, like, stable ground underneath him here just in the last year of football, to where he feels like, okay, I am the guy. And even within that, they're talking – I mean, you watch Adam Schefter in the pregame, he's talking about – oh, they don't know if they're going to extend him yet. They want to see a little bit more. You know, okay, fine. See a little bit more. I don't know. You know, the grass is not always greener on the other side. So that's where I feel for Derek Carr at times. I really do. He's in a no-win situation, like you said, a lot of the time.
And look, at some point they're going to have to make a decision. When he signed his contract, he was the highest-paid player in NFL history. That was during that window where the next quarterback who was due for a contract one up the last guy by just a little bit, and it went. Now it's a bargain. When the top of the market's $45 million and Derek Carr's at $25 million, it really is a bargain. And first 3 weeks of the season, he's making his case to get a significant bump on his next deal with Las Vegas. And, yeah, now they're going to go back and coach him hard and see how he deals with adversity. You're going to have adversity at some point during a 17-game season. It's almost assured. No one's going wire to wire as this dominant team. Right now, the Bills are the closest thing I think the NFL has to a dominant team, and they lost in week one, and they can step in a pothole at any given time. That's the beauty of it. With that many games, you're going to have bad games. And it's just the addition of that one extra game, I think, that maybe has opened our eyes to the fact that it is a long season.
Yeah.
And you are going to have adversity, and what matters is how you deal with it when it arrives.
Yeah, that's right. And, you know, he's, you know, so far through the Gruden era has handled adversity pretty well. You know, they didn't go to the playoffs last year, but it wasn't because of Derek Carr. I mean, he was probably the MVP of the football team. And then, yeah, last night, a little bit of the off night. But, damn, you know, the defense couldn't make a play, get off the field there for a period of time as well. And they were a banged-up football team. They were less than. You know, they're not at full strength. So I don't think we saw the true picture of them all the way through. And then, of course, they ran into, you know, a team that's playing real good football and is really well coached on both sides of the ball, and then has everything we talk about. When you have that, you go, okay, quarterback, good coaches both sides of the ball. And then you go, damn, some playmakers on both sides of the ball too. Some guys that the coaches didn't come through, but it doesn't matter. Joey Bosa is going to beat this double team and get there. Derwin James is going to make a pick. You know, Keenan Allen or Mike Williams are going to make a freak show type of catch. And that is where they're dangerous. And that's where I think, to your point, Mike, and why you picked them, they're here to stay. I'd be pretty, like, shocked if they weren't in the conversation for one of the better teams in the AFC once we got to December after seeing four games so far.
We're going to learn some more about the Chargers over the next 2 weeks, because they have the Browns coming to town this weekend, and then they go to Baltimore. So two tests for the Chargers out of their division. They're doing well in their division. Let's see how they do against two of the best teams from the AFC North over the next couple of weeks. After that, things soften a little bit. I hate to say a game against the Patriots counts as a softening schedule, but given where the Patriots are right now, it's, I think, a fair assessment of the situation. Officiating was a focal point for some criticism last night. Here's John Gruden, who was not happy after the game about a taunting penalty that was called against tight end Darren Waller, who made a catch and directed something at the Chargers sideline. Here's Gruden.
I don't understand the taunting. I understand. I hate taunting. I think it's ridiculous. I think what happens after an interception or a touchdown, we allow these celebrations. I consider that taunting. I don't understand what happened over there on the Chargers sideline, but the official made the call. We have to deal with it. We couldn't get any momentum going. That didn't help us.
Now, Gruden is one of the few coaches who doesn't understand taunting and doesn't like the taunting rule. Most of the coaches do. There's Darren Waller making the catch, and all he did was slam the ball down.
Bad call.
I don't get this one. I understand what they're trying to do, but he's just slamming the ball down.
Right.
That's it. And I don't even know that he's
not saying anything. He's not doing anything.
Is he upset that he didn't, you know, get past those guys? Like, that looked to me more like he was frustrated with himself for something.
Not exactly. That
he was trying to stick it in anyone's face.
I agreed, Mike. I think he was just like, he's going like, damn, I finally got the ball. Let's go, right? That was his first touch of the night, if I remember correctly. So, you know, there in itself, he's just trying to get energy and go like, here we go. We're going to get going right now. And then buzzkill. Referees were bad all over the NFL this weekend. I know I said that to you in text last night. It bothered me, but that bothered me right there. It's a stupid call. And the Raiders were, you know, had no momentum. And finally you go, oh, okay, at least they're going to maybe change the field position here a little bit and get things going. And then, oh, wait, you're back, you know, farther back than you were before the completion. Yeah, stupid call by the ref, stupid.
And here's my concern about where things currently are on the taunting rule generally, because I remember after the first 2 weeks when there were 11 fouls, much was made of the reality that there were only three in week three. But I think what's happening is they're not calling taunting
all the time,
called early because they're taking the heat. Hey, the hit on Gronk that broke his ribs,
yeah,
the guy that put him on the ground stood over him
and gave him the
that's far more taunting than what Darren Waller did, and it wasn't called. So I don't know how many were called this weekend. It's on my list of things to do if I ever get to it, but that one last night, I understand what they're trying to prevent. Last night, that call does not fall into that bucket.
No, 100%. He's not showing anybody up. He didn't get in anybody's face. Yeah, unfortunately, he was on the Chargers sideline. But it's still, he made no reference to anybody there. I mean, if anybody, he was taunting anybody, it was the ref. I mean, he looks like he's looking right at the ref. I mean, that's the only guy. So, over-officiating there, for sure. Just, you know, again, it's okay. We know what the taunting thing is. It's about personally putting another guy down and showing him up. And that's not what was done there. And you can see his mouth in a few of the replays. It's closed. So he didn't say anything that we didn't hear. He's biting down on his big Eric Dickerson mouthpiece he's got there. Bad call all the way.
And thank you for not repeating the colorful phrase that you used a couple of weeks ago to explain the specific type of behavior that you don't want a player to be engaging in with an opponent. And for those of you who don't know what we're talking about, you can go back and
I'll tell you later.
The past episodes. Well, yeah. Joey Bosa also found himself in some hot water. They never replayed this. When there's a penalty like that where a guy gets called for unsportsmanlike conduct late in the play or after the whistle, and they said that there was something directed at the ref, we never got to see it, but we got to hear from Joey Bosa after the game with his thoughts on officiating generally and the foul that was called against him specifically.
I'm sorry, but you're blind. Like, open your eyes and do your job. It's so bad. It's unbelievable. I mean, look at the play. Sack, game over, 15 yards. It's a big deal. Obviously, that's on me. I should never lose my control like that. But these guys have got to do a better job because it's been years of terrible, terrible missed calls left and right. It's really pathetic, honestly. But pathetic on me, too, for doing what I did. Call or not, I have to take a step back and just go to the next play. But, man, they just seem to not be even have their eyes open half the time.
So he's not disputing the flag that he drew. He's disputing the quality of the officiating generally. And, you know, when a coach says something like that, he's going to get a letter from the NFL informing him of an involuntary contribution to the charity of the NFL's choice. I don't know where the line is for a player. Usually, and this was a while ago, years ago, the line for a player was, you can criticize the officials, just don't suggest that there are improper motives, like they, you know, are corrupt, that they're Tim Donaghy, that they're on the take, that they're trying to fix the game. If you do that, then you get fined. It'll be curious to see whether or not Joey Bosa gets fined for what he said after the game last night, because that was about as strong of a statement as you're going to get from a player, short of saying that they're corrupt. He's just saying they're grossly incompetent.
That's as strong as I've heard a player really go after the refs in a long, long time. And he said it in such a calm manner, and I love how he kind of like self-scouted thyself too as he was doing it, to go, it was unacceptable by him as well. But I think, listen, defensive players have to be at their wit's end. They have to. I don't know any other way to say it. You know me. You've been hearing me complain a little bit every week so far. It's gotten out of hand. There's too many, oh, you hit the quarterback too hard. We're going to throw a penalty. You hit him too hard. I don't know. It wasn't nothing legal about it, but you can't do that to the quarterback. It's, oh, you know, offense is allowed to push off as much as you want. Doesn't matter. Never offensive pass interference. I mean, it's like 1 out of 100 it's called. That's not fair. And I watch, you know, Mike, you know me, I'm Ron Jaworski. I watch the film. I see a handful of plays every game where quarterbacks get out of the pocket and defensive ends are now trying to run to go get them, and they get held and it doesn't get called. And that does bother me. I don't care that I'm an ex-quarterback or not. You know, call the game the right way. The defense is already at enough of a disadvantage. And I think that's where they go crazy right now.
I wonder how much of that mindset from the Legion of Boom from 8-9 years ago exists for some teams, where basically what the Legion of Boom decided to do was, we're going to hold the receivers every play because they're not going to call it every play. They call it 1 out of 10? Fine. We're just going to do it all the time because they're not going to constantly pull the flag out. And I feel like with some of these holding fouls, I mean, you'll see the replay. You'll see the guy's hand holding on to the flap of the shoulder pad, it's clearly holding, and the flag doesn't come out. Sometimes it does, sometimes it doesn't. I mean, if you grab the guy by the – there was a game – what game was it? It was the Sunday night game, I think, where basically it tried to twist the guy's head off. They called it illegal use of hands, hands of the face. It was illegal use of hands, hands trying to remove the head from the torso.
Seriously. Yeah. It was the Matt Judon play, I believe, that you're talking about. Yeah. So I know it's I feel for the defensive side of the ball right now. I do. The game is so reffed one-sided, and I think that's where they're frustrated. Hey, I'm watching Rams at Cardinals yesterday a few times. Kyler Murray runs out of the pocket. I mean, there's holding. He's the guys on the edge are being held. Doesn't matter. Oh, it's cool. Look, it's good for fantasy. It's good for ratings. It's great for offense. I don't know what it is, but there's missed calls, and I thought it was a kind of a theme of the whole weekend. Some really like inconsistent refereeing throughout the league this weekend.
I remember when Gruden was in the broadcast booth, it seemed like every week he would rant about penalties. Too many penalties. Too many. Well, tell the players not to commit them then. It's not like they're phantom. It's a question of when they decide to throw the flag, because they happen. Guys are taking it up to the limit of the rule and sometimes beyond, and daring the officials to stop the game and throw the flag. And if you're not committing the penalties, there won't be any penalties called. Rarely, I think, do you have a flag thrown for something that just like didn't happen, except roughing the passer. All of the other fouls, rarely is there something where it's like, what the hell was that? But if anything, there are more fouls happening then there are flags being thrown, Chris.
Yeah, probably. Yes. Yeah, probably. But, you know, that's it's like we've talked about. Rubbing is racing, you know, and yeah, there's going to be fouls on every football play. But right now, just, you know, did it really affect the play? You know, is it really holding this day and age in the NFL? You know, again, I just find it inconsistent. I don't know where else to say. I wish I could show video evidence and had this stuff prepared and go, hey, look, here's like 10 plays that drove me crazy last week watching, you know, because there's at least that every week, but, it's tough. I know these referees are in a tough spot. It's a lot of large bodies flying around at a million miles per hour. And, sometimes I get the sense that they're a little overwhelmed and the game's too fast for them to really ref at times.
And I think the league benefits tremendously from having so many of its games played at the same time on the same day. It makes it very difficult for those of us who cover the sport to get into every
detail,
nook and cranny of, well, look at this and look at that. If there was a game every night that we could all focus on, there would be much greater scrutiny. Case in point, and I'm going to write about this today. Adam Thielen was blatantly held in the end zone the last play of the Vikings-Browns game.
Sure.
Blatantly held.
Yeah.
And it wasn't even a Hail Mary. It was, what, 25, 30-yarder. It was a normal throw. It wasn't the big up-for-grabs 50-yard bomb. It was just a throw to the end zone on the final play of the game. And Thielen was being held, and it wasn't called. No different than what we talked about last week with the Chargers-Chiefs when the Chargers players were mugging Travis Kelce and Tyreek Hill. So, and the league's approach. And, hey, you know what? Maybe the best approach is just ignore all of it. Because if you acknowledge it, you give life to the controversy and you turn it into a thing.
Yeah.
If you just say nothing, then it's just a couple of idiots like us shouting into the void.
Yeah, agreed. Like you mean like the Dexter Lawrence not really being offsides for the Giants kick? Like, just ignore it and people will stop talking about it after a day or two.
And there'll be more games. That's the beauty also of there's only, you know, you have Tuesday, Wednesday, play again Thursday, Friday, Saturday, play again Sunday. Life moves on. We move on. We're going to take a break. When we return, will Jimmy Garoppolo be playing this weekend? There are some different opinions and Kyle Shanahan probably likes it that way. More PFT Live right after this.
Around any corner, within every battle, and with the dawn of each new day, the threat of the unexpected, the unpredictable, and the unrelenting lies in wait. But Marines will always be there. They are the constant in the chaos. No matter the battlefield, Marines adapt to win, defeating every shifting threat, protecting our nation's future. The few, the proud, the Marines.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
It happened in the first series. I don't know exactly what happened. Tweaked the calf. It hurt initially. I thought I could keep trying to go, and it just kept getting worse and worse, traveling down to the Achilles a little bit. But we'll get more information tomorrow with the MRI and everything. Hopefully, you know, hoping for the best right now. Right side. It felt like that, yeah. I don't know if that is actually what happened or not, but yeah, just felt something go in the calf. And like I said, we'll see more tomorrow.
How hard was it for you to tell them you can't go?
Yeah, it sucked. I mean, just in between series, I could feel it tightening up and everything. Thought I could gut it out. I tried to for the first half, but yeah, it's just tough, man. I don't know. Been in this situation too many times, and it's getting real old, you know, so it's just one of those things that part of the business, though.
Jimmy Garoppolo from Sunday. I really do wish these teams would make microphones available to the reporters so we could hear the questions.
Yeah.
We hear the answers, but a lot of times I don't know what the hell they're talking about because we didn't hear the question. But we do know what Jimmy Garoppolo is talking about. He's talking about his calf injury. And one of the things you didn't hear him say in that clip is his estimation that he hopes it's only going to be a week or two that he misses, which implies pretty clearly that he didn't expect to play this Sunday, Chris, against the Arizona Cardinals. Well, Kyle Shanahan told reporters yesterday that Jimmy Garoppolo has a chance to play on Sunday against the Cardinals, and I don't know if this is just gamesmanship or what. Take full advantage of the uncertainty that it injects into the Cardinals' defensive game planning, where they may be facing Jimmy Garoppolo, they may be facing Trey Lance, but it's never in a team's interest to be open and transparent about a quarterback injury when there's a chance you can keep the other team guessing for a while.
Yeah, I mean, and listen, I mean, we know Shanahan's definitely into that. I mean, I know he's my friend. I'd like to throw the challenge flag and just go, BS, BS. I don't buy it. I don't buy it. You're just trying to get the Cardinals to prepare for Jimmy Garoppolo's offense too. I mean, that's the way it looks right now sitting here on Tuesday. I don't know that. Got no inside info. You know, the calf injury, something like that can also be I watched that on tape a little yesterday. I think in the second drive of the game, or might have been the third drive of the game, he did get sacked and somebody's knee hit him right in the calf muscle. And I did notice him limping right after that. So if it is like a bruise or a contusion rather than like a pulled muscle type of thing, then, yeah, you might feel considerably better the next day. But I feel like it's more like preparation and wishful thinking from Shanahan right now and wanting Jimmy Garoppolo to maybe be out there and be ready to play, because I'm sure he's not sure Trey Lance is ready to play.
And Kyle's got to wonder about the wisdom of Garoppolo to stand up there and say what he said. He had to be irritated by that. It's like, Jimmy, why are you basically ruling yourself out for this week? Why would you do that? Have you not been paying attention to the way this game works? There's an element of uncertainty that we want to embrace. It helps us. It's going to help us win this week if the Cardinals are diluted in the attention that they can devote to getting ready for you versus getting ready for Trey Lance. But I just feel like when we saw the resignation, we saw the tell, the scratch of his face. I mean, yeah, the guy gets injured too much.
Right.
And some of it is a result of his own stupidity, like dropping his shoulder into a defensive back at the sideline and blowing out his ACL. And other things, it just kind of happens in the scrum of bodies. But he's one of the few quarterbacks right now in the NFL that is constantly showing up on the injured list. And that's why they decided to move on from him.
Right.
And that's why Trey Lance is going to get his opportunity. If Jimmy can't play, Trey's getting his opportunity to show that he can be the guy. And it could be like Colin Kaepernick and Alex Smith in 2012, where in comes the new guy and the old guy never gets back again. Or Justin Herbert last year when Tyrod Taylor had his unfortunate encounter with Dr. Needle.
Yeah.
No. It may be that the young guy takes over and that's it.
Yeah. No, I mean, it certainly could be that. I mean, if Trey Lance takes advantage of the opportunity, you know, this is one of his positive plays of Sunday, certainly, the blown coverage there. You know, I think it's cover three. The corner should never be following that receiver in, leaves it wide open. Good job by him seeing it and just getting the completion there. But, I don't know. You know, again, I think I'm sure Shanahan's got a little bit of fear of Trey Lance being out there. I mean, hey, anybody that watched that game the other day, it's raw as hell. It's raw as hell. It's the rawest of the quarterbacks. It's not even close. It's the least impressive throwing of all the quarterbacks. He needs a ton of space. It's one wobbler after another. Accuracy is below average for NFL standards. Yeah, he's got power in his arm, and he can, like, unleash the howitzer every now and then. But at times, you don't know if that howitzer is going to hit the broadside of the barn. And that's where I'm sure there's a little concern there as of right now, and the offense is not exactly steamrolling people running the football right now either. So there's all of that, and I'm going to be interested to see, because, of course, this Cardinals defense can fly around, and they're made to stop these type of running quarterbacks with the athletes they got. So that's where it's a tough matchup for the 49ers and Trey Lance too.
And they don't flinch at the idea of dealing with Trey Lance. They have to chase Kyler Murray around in practice.
Exactly. So, right.
This is a huge one, though, for the 49ers. This is kind of like what happened last night on a greater scale. You got a 4-0 team and a 2-2 team. You're going to be 5-0 and 2-3, or 4-1 and 3-2. And if the
big
49ers
difference.
Lose this game, that is a hell of a hole for them to have to dig out of.
It is. That'd be disappointing, you know, because I don't look at them as a 2-2 football team. Mike, I've never seen a team whoop the crap out of a team the way the 49ers whoop the Seahawks and be down 21-7. I mean, it was unreal. The 49ers absolutely whooped the crap out of the Seattle Seahawks. I mean, I think at one point in the game, it was like 170 yards total offense to -3, and we were in like the second quarter of the football game. And they could do nothing, but it was Robbie Gold missed. They missed field goals. You know, there's a lot of empty yards where, they get yards, but they end up, the drive stalls out, nothing happens there. The defense can't create any turnovers or create magic. Like, it's an awesome defense, but in 2019, they created turnovers and havoc and set up the offense. We're not seeing that much right now either. So I go Shanahan and company got to be disappointed. They're 2-2 at this point.
Well, you mentioned Robbie Gould. He was unable to kick because of a pregame injury. So Mitch Wisnowski was the kicker, and he's kicking like a 42-yard field goal. Like, why? Like,
yeah,
maybe he can make them in practice when they're screwing around,
right,
it's a far different situation when you have a new holder, because the punter is usually the holder. Kyle Juszczyk's the holder, and you're out there doing it live in a game when you had no idea you were going to have to do it. That's a lot to ask.
It is a lot.
Of these guys who are out of their normal positions. The normal position in Chicago continues to be Andy Dalton is the starting quarterback when he's healthy. Here is Matt Nagy, coach of the team from Monday, explaining what will come next for the Bears after they got to 2-2 with a win over the Lions.
When we work through this whole process, we got to see where Andy's at health-wise these next 2 days. That's important because, like we said this whole time, you know, when Andy's healthy, right, when he's healthy, he's our starter. He's the one, Justin's the two, Nick's the three. So what's been great about this, you know, the last couple of weeks is Justin's had the opportunity to play and get significant snaps, and he's grown from it. So now we just got to see, like, where is Andy's health at? Honestly, the next 2 days will be revealing to us. And then once that happens and we get a feel for where he is, then we as coaches decide, okay, hey, where are we at right now? How do we feel he is percentage-wise, Andy, to be able to go into that game as the starter?
And look, it gets back to the whole uncertainty we're talking about with the 49ers. You want the next opponent to be concerned about Justin Fields or Andy Dalton. But Matt Nagy has not wavered
not at all.
In his position that
right.
Dalton will start when he's healthy. The question is, who decides when he's healthy and when is he really healthy? Or is it healthy? Is it the old 100% rule where he's 100% when the coach decides he's 100%, Chris?
Yeah, no, it does seem like there's a little bit of that. You know, David Montgomery got hurt. You know, that does hurt the prospects of, like, the Justin Fields offense. I mean, again, Mike, you know my stance on this. You do. Yeah, I know Justin Fields is not perfect. Yeah, he's not that great on third down yet. And some of those little nuances there, certainly. But I like the way the offense looked. At least they gave him a chance the other day. There was more underneath the center. Let's run the ball. Let's bootleg. Let's play action. Let's move him a little bit more. You know, we'll play that type of offense, and, you know, when an opportunity presents itself, we'll let him unleash a deep one like he did to Mooney for the long post, which was a great throw by Justin Fields, and then you play through their defense. I mean, that's how they got to the playoffs the last two out of the last 3 years. It's that style. It's not Andy Dalton shotgun throw it. It was Mitch Trubisky underneath center, bootleg, run the ball, scramble and make a play every now and then. Okay. And, you know, have a few splash throws within the football game. And that's where I would just err on going Justin Fields. But that does not sound like it's the case there in Chicago. And, yeah, they're holding strong to being Dalton, to being the starter.
Yeah, and look, Fields looked better.
Yeah.
But it was the Lions. It was the Lions.
Sure.
And you don't even have to say which year of Lions in contrast, because it's not like there's any Lions defense in the past 25 years or 30 years that you would think, hey, the Lions, it's the 95 Lions. No. It's the Lions, and the Lions are the Lions, and the Bears need to get it done offensively against a better defense than that. Let's go ahead and take a break. And when we return, the social media uproar from the weekend involving Urban Meyer is something we deliberately avoided here and at PFT until Urban Meyer said something about it. Now that he has said something about it, what he said, what it means, and how it could affect the football team becomes highly relevant. And we're going to discuss it when PFT Live continues right after this. Okay, some photos emerged on social media over the weekend of Urban Meyer with multiple females who are not Mrs. Urban Meyer, and the internet went crazy. Social media imploded or exploded or both. He was trending on Sunday morning, a Sunday that the Jaguars weren't actually playing football, and I didn't know what to do with it. I told the writers at PFT, we're just going to stay away from this until the Jaguars say something about it or Urban Meyer says something about it. And on Monday morning, Urban Meyer, Chris, had his press conference, usual 2-3 times a week. Urban Meyer was asked about it right out of the gates, and here's what he had to say.
I just apologize to the team and staff and for being a distraction, just stupid. And so I explained everything that happened and owned it, and you know, just stupid. Should not have myself in that kind of position. There's a big group next to our restaurant, and they wanted me to come over and take pictures, and I did. And they're trying to pull me out on the dance floor, screwing around, and I should have left.
How did the team react? I mean, they're probably pretty reactionary, or you know, how did they take it? Your apology.
Well, I've always been so defensive of them. You know, I remember when Trevor told me he was going to go to Vegas for his bachelor party. I mean, I was just, my gosh, man, be careful and surround yourself, and because I've seen this happen, and I just, so the team, I spoke to a bunch of leaders one-on-one, spoke to all the players. They're good. They were focused on Tennessee, and I apologized again for being a distraction.
Yeah, the key is they were focused on Tennessee. They were until they had to deal with this, until they had to take time out of their Monday to have to hear from the coach and process what this all means and ask themselves, man, what would happen to us if we created this kind of a distraction for the organization? The coaches are not the ones, Chris, who are supposed to be creating the distractions. And Trevor Lawrence has to be wondering, how did I get pulled into this? What? Wait, I wasn't even on the team when I had my bachelor party in Las Vegas. And I get used as the example of the advice Urban Meyer gave. And it just shows how stupid the whole thing is. Urban Meyer didn't take his own advice. The lack of self-awareness is what's stunning to me. And anytime I see that kind of poor judgment, you wonder how else that defect manifests itself in everything else the person does. If you allow yourself as a man in his late 50s who understands how these things work, understands what's going to happen, he's posing for the photos. You understand, this wasn't anything that was done surreptitiously. He was smiling for the camera. If he's not able at that age to make the connection from point A to point B to point you're sleeping out in the street for a month, if not longer, and you're creating a mess for your team, and this is not going to go away quietly, and it's going to be a big deal. If you can't figure that out, what other stuff is going wrong with your team that isn't obvious? How else is that flaw affecting your ability to turn the Jaguars into the best team they can be? And I think that's a relevant thought, because there's something that ain't right there for him to have not realized where this was going to go, to not envision how A leads to B leads to C leads to D leads to what we saw yesterday.
Yeah, well, you, I mean, I hear what you're saying. It's almost like, you know, are you that, you know, unaware or like not aware of like the figure that you are? I guess that's what's a little concerning. You know, self-aware is come up a few times already in his short career with Jacksonville Jaguars and some of the things that have done there, whether it's back to the strength coach or whatever, to where you just go like, what the hell? It's 2021. I could have told you that was going to happen. Like, and listen, I did plenty of dumb things back in the day, certainly. But yeah, I mean, here I am at 41 and I feel like, what? I would never put myself in that situation at this point, and I'm not Urban Meyer. You know, that's where I'm just like shocked by it. Like, really? You thought that you were going to go to the bar or the club and have a girl grinding up on you on a video to a degree, and that nobody is just like a bunch of Ohio people, we're just going to let it go and go, hey, let's let him have his privacy. Yeah, that goes on this day and age. That's what's crazy. And then here's the other thing that I think, just this is the first thing that jumped out to me, was I went, wait, what day was this? Saturday? What? They're 0-4. We're taking the weekend off as the head coach? 0-4, we're just taking it off. I don't know. I mean, to me, again, I understand that coaches needed some time off and everything like that. But, damn, I think if you looked at a lot of the top coaches in football, they're not just like, hey, we played on Thursday night, going to take a vacation this weekend and hang behind and go to some bars and hang out. That, to me, was weird in itself.
Yeah, even though the players get a little bit of a break, the mini bye after a Thursday night game, that doesn't apply to the coaches. The coaches get right back to
usually
work, especially after a loss like that.
Right.
Remember how heartbroken he was, the post-game press conference. Now, I think if I understand the timeline correctly, because it was so late on Thursday night, I think this happened Friday night, but he said, we went to the restaurant, we stayed behind in Ohio to see the grandkids. Well, if you would have focused on the grandkids, that would have kept this from happening as well. I didn't see any grandkids in those photos. So there's a lot of challenge flags. You talk about throwing the challenge flag.
It's all
you run out of laundry quickly.
There's a lot of red
on this one.
Yeah.
And you know what bothered people in the NFL more than anything else? Now, of course, they understand it was stupid. It was lack of self-awareness. Why the hell is he wearing an Ohio State logo on his... He's a Jacksonville Jaguars head coach now. Not that he needs to wear Jaguars colors everywhere, but there are people in the league who looked at the Ohio State thing and thought, that is just really odd.
It is.
That a guy who left Ohio State multiple years ago... And hey, my approach to what I choose to wear is whatever's the cleanest and the closest. But when you're the coach of an NFL team and you no longer have an association with Ohio State, it is kind of weird to see the guy walking around in Ohio State. But hey, he's in Ohio. I'm still the king of Ohio. Even though I'm the coach of the Jacksonville Jaguars, here I am. I'm the king of Ohio, and I shouldn't even have to ask you to put your phones away when I walk in the room.
Right.
Maybe that's what he thinks.
Maybe. Listen, I mean, you know, Pete just got in my ear, and he goes, "Have you ever had a coach not fly back with you for a game? You know, after a game?" And you know, I thought about this already, but I don't think so. At no point.
You probably at times you wish that he didn't.
Oh, definitely. Right. Can we leave Gruden behind? We don't need him, do we? I don't want to have to deal with him tomorrow. I didn't play good. He's going to kill me in the meeting tomorrow. Oh, no. But, yeah, it's just rare. And, again, I understand that all these guys need free time. It's a grueling job. But, like, to what you said, like, you know, hey, usually when coaches have a weekend like that, yeah, okay, maybe you do take Friday off, all right. But usually you're back in there grinding Saturday, Sunday, or you're there Friday and it's just like smaller hours. Okay, we didn't get here at 6 a.m. and we didn't stay till 11 o'clock at night. We got here at 9. We left at 4:30. We got some work in. We got some things accomplished as a staff and a team, and you move forward. I think that to me was what I think jumped out to me more than anything about the weekend events.
Apart from the stunning lack of self-awareness and inability to imagine how these dominoes will fall, apart from that, I almost feel like Urban Meyer is determined to not be so wrapped up in coaching, to not hold on to everything so tightly like a Bill Belichick does. That Meyer decided, if I'm going to do this, I'm going to try it this way.
Right.
I'm not going to be completely and totally obsessed with it, because that didn't do me any, you know, good service in Florida or at Ohio State. I'm not going to get wrapped up in it. I'm too old for this stuff. I think I can be successful without being fully and totally obsessed with it. You're going to find out that doesn't work. There's a reason why Bill Belichick grinds and grinds and grinds all the time and is working and is working and is planning and is scheming. I don't mean that in a pejorative way, but he's always trying to come up with an edge, because it's all so close at the NFL level. You need that stuff to force it your way in a key moment. And I just, you know, I thought the talk after week two about USC and Urban Meyer won't last. This is way too premature. But after what's gone on so far this season and after what happened this weekend, I will be stunned if he's still there next year.
Wow.
Whether he gets fired or whether he quits, I don't think he's going to be there next year. Barring a dramatic change in events, I don't think he's going to be there.
Wow. I hear you. I don't know. I haven't thought about it in those terms, but certainly some shaky things have happened this year. There's no doubt. I still have faith in Urban Meyer in a lot of ways. I do. You know, we've seen little snippets in every game where you go, damn, the team's got it going, the game plan's right, you know, they are young, and there's, you know, mistakes to be made. We saw a little bit of how good they can be a little bit on Thursday night, even though it kind of fell apart there in the second half. But, yeah, I'll be interested to see where it goes. Mike, certainly I understand your reasoning or thought there behind that.
This is all still fresh and new, and it's hard to have full perspective on it as the events are still at this stage. But look, I look at it this way. And I never want to delve into someone's personal life. It's personal for a reason. But Chris, you and I think, can bring to the table a very important perspective. When you have a spouse, a life partner, somebody who has to deal with all the crap that we throw at them because of how hard we work. Well, right. How hard I work. Right. You're different. You only work 3 days a week. But I'm kidding. But, you know, it's demanding.
Right.
And it's stressful. And we're in the public eye.
Yeah.
And there's constantly that low level of, God, what's he going to say next? What's he going to do next? They carry that around. And they have to be ready to defend us. And they have to be ready to deal with the dumb stuff that we do. And the criticism that we get. The 98% of the time that we don't even deserve it. There's a background noise that you have to tolerate.
Yeah.
So then you throw on top of it.
Right.
Something as stupid as what he did. And as, you know, directly to the heart of that relationship that he's had with his wife. I'm telling you, the statement's going to go along the lines of, it's more important for me now at this time to work on my family. And he'll be right when he says it.
Yeah, well,
it's not worth it. Yeah. If your wife's not all in with that kind of a job, because right. What we do is demanding here. What a head coach in the NFL does is demanding insane. Here.
Right.
If your wife's not all in with it, it's falling apart. It's imploding. It's over. It's done. That's why I say it's going to be a stunner if he's there next year.
Yeah, I get your point 100% there. Hopefully he can rectify the situation. I'm not rooting against them in any way, but you're right. It's hard enough to be the spouse of a NFL head coach, let alone when you got public stuff like this that now you have to deal with. And that's tough on his whole family. And I'm sure, you know, they're having a lot of talks with dad right now.
And let me tell you, here's the other side of it too. And this is the last thing I'm going to say about it. This is part of the reality because I'm trying to see it from the perspective of the person who has the most direct and constant influence on Urban Meyer every day, every day, every day. We can't understate how important that is. There's a fundamental difference between being the wife of Ohio State coach Urban Meyer and the wife of Jacksonville Jaguars head coach Urban Meyer. Because at least at the college level, and this is what I think Nick and Terry Sabin, they like, you know, king and queen of
yeah,
Tuscaloosa.
Right.
It's just the king of Jacksonville. There is no co-partner type of a thing. It's different at the NFL.
No, you're not recruiting players.
Town.
Right, exactly.
Right.
You don't have relationships with moms.
Much more central role.
Yes.
At the college town
definitely.
Than at the NFL town, and that's going to be part of this too,
yeah.
I think.
Agreed, Mike, agreed. I mean, listen, I could speak to Mac Brown. His wife is great, Sally Brown. I mean, she was the best. Part of the reason a lot of kids went there, it made me feel comfortable about going there, just knowing, hey, there's a normal person I could talk to, and if I don't want to talk ball with Mac, I could talk to her, and she actually seems like she cares about me. There is. It's a totally different lifestyle. College to the NFL, not even comparable for players or coaches.
Now, that's your perspective on the relationship with Sally Brown. I'm sure she would like roll her eyes and say, oh, here comes that pothead again.
I was just dabbling then. I was only dabbling. I wasn't a full-fledged pothead. Right.
Let's take a break. When we return, Chris watched the film on the last unbeaten team in the NFL. We'll discuss that next here on PFT Live.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
With the Wells Fargo Active Cash Credit Card, you can earn unlimited 2% cash rewards on purchases you want and purchases you need. That means you earn 2% cash rewards on what you want, like season tickets to watch your favorite team, and 2% cash rewards on what you need, like paying for parking. That's the beauty of the Active Cash Credit Card. It's ready when you are, with unlimited 2% cash rewards. The Wells Fargo Active Cash Credit Card. That's real life ready. Terms apply. Learn more at wellsfargo.com/activecash.